Now, it's good to see you all tonight, in spite of the fact that it's a very inclement night. And we trust that God will bless as our brother has spread his word to all present. You remember the two meetings that are made in the will of God, tomorrow evening and Friday evening at 7:30. Doubtless the Lord's people will pray earnestly that God will bless his word throughout our time with you. Now, as you know, our reading tonight is in Isaiah chapter 6, the prophecy of Isaiah, and chapter 6, reading at verse number 1. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. Above it stood seraphim, each one had six wings, with twain he covered his face, and with twain he covered his feet, and with twain he did fly. And one cried unto another and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts, the whole earth is full of his glory. And the posts of the door moved at the voice of him that cried, and the house was filled with smoke. Then said I, Woe is me, for I am undone, because I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips, for mine eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. Then flew one of the seraphim unto me, having a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with the tongs from off the altar. And he laid it upon my mouth and said, Lo, this has touched thy lips, and thine iniquity is taken away, and thy sin purged. Also I heard the voice of the Lord saying, Whom shall I send, and who will go for us? Then said I, Here am I, send me. And he said, Go and tell this people, Hear ye indeed, but understand not, and see ye indeed, but perceive not. Make the heart of this people fat, and make their ears heavy, and shut their eyes, lest they see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and understand with their heart, and convert or turn again, and be healed. Then said I, Lord, how long? And he answered, Until the cities be wasted without inhabitant, and the houses without man, and the land be utterly desolate. And the Lord have removed men far away, and there be a great forsaking in the midst of the land. But yet it shall be a tenth, and it shall return, and shall be eaten, as a tale tree, and as an oak tree, whose substance is in them when they cast their leaves. So the holy seed shall be the substance thereof. Now we trust the Lord will be pleased in the riches of his grace to bless to us the reading of this precious chapter. I'd like to think tonight we would spend time profitably in considering what I'm termed the response of prophetic consecration. I feel that this is a great chapter on the subject, as we think of Isaiah himself, of course, as he speaks in the personal pronoun, Then said I, Woe is me, for I am undone, and so on. So I want you just to enter into the fullness of this chapter in relation to our subject of consecration. I think it's interesting to notice that the timing of this vision is very important. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne high and lifted up. Let us call that the time of visitation. The time of visitation. And when was it? Well, you need to turn to 2 Chronicles, if you have opportunity, and chapter 26, verses 16 to 21, and there you will enter into the reason why this was such an important date and such an important time in the life of Isaiah. Because you will know that Uzziah, being a king and having authority on the hand of God, proved himself very efficiently in his service. The chapter unfolds that very clearly. But something came into his heart and into his mind that was not only contrary to the mind and will of God, but also contrary to the very principle of the temple. And I think you all know what he attempted to do. While he was certainly anointed king, he certainly was not anointed as a priest. But what he attempted to do was, he attempted to come into the holy place in the temple, and he wanted to offer sacrifice. Now, you remember that the priests endeavored with all their energy to put him out. He resisted, and as they did so, he was stricken with divine judgment in the holy place, in the temple. He became a leper. Now, that's a very sad experience in my judgment. And it has often happened, hasn't it, that dear brethren and sisters that have proved themselves efficiently and have been blessed of God and used of God in an earlier time in their lives, something happens. Something arises in their soul that is contrary to divine truth. And they seek to follow that or accomplish it, and it results in divine discipline. I would pray very earnestly for my own soul in this connection. I'm sure you would do the same for yours, wouldn't you? While it seems to me by your very presence, and it seems to you by my very position on this platform, that everything is going according to the mind of God. But is it? Is it? Now, I don't like telling you all the things that I know, but I have to say this. Some of you may or may not know, I have a very, very accurate and a very useful model of the tabernacle. Now, that was made by a young man that I saw saved in the drawing office many years ago in Shorten Highlands. And as he proceeded and progressed in divine things, he became deeply interested in the subject of the tabernacle. And what we did in our time, and we had free time, we applied to the tabernacle all the principles we had to work with when it came to aircraft in terms of pressure and its power to resist this and that. And we took up all the items of the tabernacle and applied the principles by which we decided aircraft operation, and we found that everything God provided could stand the test. Now, those notes were very valuable indeed. But then I left for Malaya, and my good friend was given a very good position in another part of the aircraft factory. And being in the machine shop, in the Boston machine shop, he was able to use the machinery there for the preparation and for the making of his model. Well, that's it. But one very sad day in 1970, may I just say, a few days before my late wife was called home, his wife arrived at our home. to discover and to tell us they were separate for many months. And she pleaded that I go and see him. Well, under my circumstances, I found it was impossible. But my late wife was the last thing ever she asked me to do, was to make sure I went that night to see this brother. Well, I did. And there he had the tabernacle model on the ground on the floor of his house. Well, I'll sell it, he said. Well, I'll buy it. I said, I want to ask you a question. What is wrong? Now listen to what he said. And listen to what I have here before me. He said, I ministered for 4 years and never prayed once. I lived for the last 3 years in that ministry and was living with another woman. I was unfinished. Now, I couldn't believe it. But that is just typical of what's here. Here was a man that was so gifted, so talented, could minister the word of God under any circumstances, but look at the sin. Look at the unjustified action. Preaching for 4 years and never prayed once. And 3 of those years he was living in sin. Now, I want you to understand that however great your privilege, however prominent you or I may be, just like Uzziah, we have to be very vigilant. We have to be extremely careful because we could do something that would bring in divine discipline and divine judgment. And that's very sad indeed. So that's what happened to Uzziah. Now, in the year that King Uzziah died, Isaiah said, I saw the Lord. I wonder how that complies with the passage. I would feel that Isaiah, being what he was going to be, was before God and was looking to God for guidance and was looking to God for direction. And it came to the moment, the very year, that the discipline of God was registered in finality in the removal of Uzziah. I believe it cast this dear man right into the presence of God in a way he had never known before. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord. Now, I think that's wonderful. You know, beloved, this could happen to you, this could happen to me under any circumstance. But often, when God deals with circumstances in his divine directive judgment, it makes us think. It brings us into deep concern. Now, I feel, I may be wrong, but I feel that this is what caused Isaiah to respond and to recognize and to realize the presence of the Lord in a way he had never known before. And I trust that whatever the circumstances God uses, young friend or older friend, for your enrichment, for your enlightenment, for your encouragement, you'll be able to acknowledge them with all the fullness of devotion that Isaiah is doing here. It was a time of visitation. What does he say? I saw. I love those words. I saw. I saw what? I saw the Lord sitting upon a throne. I think that's wonderful. What happened? And his train filled the temple. Sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. That's a very precious word. Really, it's his skirts, isn't it? Now, what happened? With the passing of this king, that had invoked divine displeasure. Here's this man, I would say a young man, brought into the consciousness of the Lord. I saw the Lord sitting upon the throne. Now that's a tremendous subject. You know, pardon the discourse, but you would know that Isaiah speaks of the throne. And you would know Jeremiah speaks of the throne. And you would know that Ezekiel speaks of the throne. And the next largest book in the book of prophecy is Daniel. And he speaks of the throne. Now, if I went into that tonight, I think I'd be here all night. But, dear beloved in Christ, will you take time to look at this moment, at this verse, and ask yourself the question, what brought this consciousness of the throne to the eye of Isaiah? Then go to Jeremiah, I could give you the passage, but I want you to read it yourself. And notice what he has to say about the throne. Then come to Ezekiel and see what he has to say about the throne. And come to Daniel. And you will see that those four great prophets have a wonderful concept of the throne of God as to one, Ezekiel saw its supremacy. Right? And I like to think that as far as Daniel was concerned, he saw its sovereignty. Oh, he saw other kings on the thrones. But thank God he was able to look and saw the Lord sitting upon the throne. And then Jeremiah, well, that's a lovely passage, and he sees it in relation to the sanctuary. Now, I ask myself the question, why was it that these men found these things and found this issue so real? Well, what you'd have to do is this. You'd have to look at the four great prophets and their ministry. And then you'd have to consider the conditions under which they ministered. And you would find that each of them were so conscious of the position and the presence and the power and the preeminence of the throne that they were able to apply the ministry suited to the need they faced. Now I know I'm covering a good deal, but I want you to be able to look at that. And if you need any help, do contact me. But all I want you to see is this. Here were four great prophets of God, had a relationship with the throne, suited to their ministry, suited to their exercise. And listen, whatever you may be doing for God, are you taking responsibility in this assembly? Are you functioning for God in the work of the gospel? Are you seeking to establish the truth of God in this locality? Whatever service you're accomplishing for God, remember, if you could only be helped by these references, as I've been, to see how these men valued the rule, the reign, and the regality of the throne, I'm telling you, you'll feel real encouraged. And so I feel this is what helped Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Daniel in their respective ministry. They got a concept. They got a sight of the throne. So that's what's here. I saw the Lord sitting upon a throne. Now, before I come to that in a practical sense, let me say something else. If you go back to chapter 1 of Isaiah, you'll find in verse number 1 these words. Chapter 1, the vision of Isaiah, the son of Amos, which he saw, concerning whom? Judah and so on. Right? Now chapter 2, the word, verse 1, that Isaiah, the son of Amos, saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. Now, if I followed the ministry in that chapter, right through to where we are, again, we'll be here all night. But you will notice that, first of all, here is the exercise and the experience of Isaiah, what he saw. Chapter 1 and chapter 2. But listen, here's another sight. The year that King Uzziah died, I saw also, what? The Lord sitting upon a throne. Now again, if I went into what he saw and followed his ministry in chapter 1, you'd find it very instructive. Then when I would come to chapter 2 and follow it right through, you would find he had a note of warning, and he was very accustomed using the word woe, as you will see in chapter 5. But now it comes to this issue. I saw the Lord sitting upon a throne. And you know, beloved, it's wonderful to me to see how this is presented. The consciousness of Jeremiah is given in the first chapter of God's call. Ezekiel does the same in chapter 1, visions of God. But you'll notice Isaiah keeps it until chapter 6. That's interesting, isn't it? And so what I feel is this. If I'm going to see what he saw, if I'm going to minister as he ministered, what would be vital to my experience and yours is this. Not just to see the need of so many believers in Victoria Drive Assembly. Not so much to see so many believers in need in British Columbia. That's good. That's vital. But important and above it all, beloved, would be to see something and someone infinitely greater. So as to be strengthened, so as to be prepared to function as God would have us. So he says, I saw the Lord high and lifted up. Isn't that wonderful? Look at the words. Sitting. Sitting. What does that mean? Undisturbed. Undisturbed repose. And you know, beloved, there's Uzziah. Look at his recklessness. Look at his awfulness. Look at what happened. But the throne, and the one sitting on it, is seated, undisturbed. That's encouraging. We might be disappointed with brother this and sister that. We might be frustrated by the failure of something here and something else there. But brethren, never allow the circumstances to overwhelm your fidelity and your faithfulness, and have your eye fixed above. I saw also the Lord sitting in all the undisturbedness of his serenity. What else? High and lifted up. Undefiled in his sanctity, above and beyond the infamy and the iniquity of Uzziah. And then thirdly, and the stream filled the temple. I love those words, undiminished in his sovereignty. I'm going to ask you, beloved, have you seen him like that? Can you gaze on the Lord Jesus sitting on the throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple? That would bring me to the throne tonight, to see that blessed one exalted in all the fullness of his glory, sufficient to meet every need, as we will see in these moments. Well, look what else. He saw the Lord sitting high and lifted up, and then what happened? Well, I love these words. And above him, above it, stood the seraphim. Each one had six wings, with twain he covered his face, and with twain he covered his feet, and with twain he did fly. And one cried unto another and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. I love those words. I'm asking you a question. How do you see him? If I were asking you to describe your vision of Christ, how would you define it? What is your experience? What is my experience of the one seated in glory? Here it is before this great exercise. And you notice in verse 1, verse 8, and verse 11, we have the word Adonai. You notice in verse 3 and 5, he is the Lord of hosts. Notice in verse 12, he is Jehovah. What a richness, what a variety, what a reality of the essential glory and essential dignity of the one that sits upon the throne. Now, I know it's very simple, but I'm asking my soul, am I aware of all that he is and all that he would manifest himself to be as the one exalted at the right hand of God? Well, I seem to think that I do know, but do I? And so as I look at these words in this chapter that describe the Lord sitting upon the throne, am I conscious of these terms? Am I conscious of his worth? And what is it? Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. I'm sure we can understand that, can't we? The triune God in a state of holiness that's undefiled and undefilable. And just to think that that's the one that we're serving. Just to think that that's the one that is sovereign. Just to think of that's the one that's seated at the right hand of God at this moment of time is essentially all that he is. Well, I love these words. And verse number 5, please. Then said I, Woe is me, for I am undone, because I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips, for mine eyes have seen the King, and so on. He heard the voice of heaven's seraphim. He saw the glory of heaven's sovereign. But now he senses the need and he experiences the power of heaven's sacrifice. Then said I, Woe is me, for I am undone. Because I'm a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips, for mine eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. Then, oh, I love those words. Just at that moment, then flew one of the seraphim unto me, having a live coal in his hand, which had taken with the tongs from off the altar, and he touched my mouth. Oh, we're thankful for the resources of the glorified Christ. We're thankful, blessed be his name, for his wondrous grace to accommodate our interest, to accelerate our activity by granting us a consciousness of a cleansing that is absolutely perfect, pure, and permanent. Hope we know that. After all, brethren, we can't go out of that street there without being defiled. There are so many influences around us that we have just to say, as this man, I'm a man of unclean lips. Although, you know what I mean? I'm not saying that you use unclean words. But what I mean is this, you can be tremendously and sadly affected by the surroundings in which we live. So the quicker and the more often we come into this experience with God, the more effective and the more efficient in our lives will be the work of Calvary. Then flew one of the seraphim with a live coal from off the altar. Isn't that wonderful? What does it mean? It means to me that here is the application of the work of Calvary to my soul. And as we bow down before God nightly and constantly, we're thankful to Him for the tremendous fullness of Calvary. That precious blood that cleanses us from all sin. And it's wonderful to think that you and I constantly can enter into the presence of God and be made conscious of the fullness of Calvary's tremendous cleansing fullness. Blood shed at the altar. A live coal. It's not dead. It's got power. It had cleansing power. It was efficient, it was effective. And we're thankful tonight, while it's a long time ago, we're glad to know it's just right as though it was the moment ago. The application of Calvary's work to our souls tonight is rich and real and is renewable every moment we require it. Touched my mouth and said, oh, this has touched thy lips, and thine iniquity is taken away and thy sin purged. Well, I love those words, don't you? The foundations moved, but the burning coal was there and it touched my lips. Radical and real and enough. Now, all I want you to face is this. All I want to ask is this, before we go any further, is there any possibility that I could be standing before you tonight and you sitting before me, and the day's almost gone, and as yet we haven't really known or experienced the cleansing efficiency of Calvary? So, beloved, I trust that you know this experimentally. Here's this dear man experiencing it typically, but actually for a soul. We have something richer in this sense. We know where we can come to. We know we can enter into his presence. We know we can bow before him in acknowledgement. And we know that he can bring to us all the fullness of that mighty sacrifice, shall I say, typically seen in that live coal from off the altar. Now verse 8. A time, I call it a vision. And then a time, I call it of visitation. Now a time of vocation. Verse number 8. And I heard the voice of the Lord. Also I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send and who will go for us? He knew the privilege of heaven's service. He felt the power of heaven's sacrifice. Now he's conscious of the privilege of heaven's service. For the Lord said, whom shall I send and who will go for us? Now, I feel that many have used these words properly and efficiently, but maybe exclusively in relation to what we would call full-time service. And that could be. But after all, beloved, I would feel that this passage applies to you in your situation, as it does to me in mine. Listen to these words. Whom shall I send, and who will go for us? Brother and sister, you have a response to make. You have a responsibility. I would feel that if you come into the presence of God conscious of all that has happened, conscious of your unworthiness, but realizing the fullness of the provision God has made, and if God is asking you then, having been cleared and cleansed and I trust consecrated, will you answer to his call? Who then? Whom shall I send, and who will go for us? I trust that's why you're functioning in this assembly as you are. I trust, beloved, this categorizes your conduct. I know we can apply it in a special way, but I wanted to make sure that there's no one in this meeting this evening feels excluded from this exercise. Wherever you are, we think of the tremendous need of the assembly. We think of the tremendous privilege of the assembly. And so I'm asking my soul, I want you to ask your soul, am I responding to this question, whom shall I send? Who will go for us? That was the offer. What did he say? Then said I, here am I, send me. Send me. I don't know whether you have said that or not. There were two friends of mine, and they were a bit older than I was. And one of these dear friends told me that just at the beginning of the war in 1939, they were called up to Scotland. And the both of them were in London just before going to France. And these two brethren, very good friends of mine in later days, went to a missionary meeting. And they listened to the word of the missionary and came back to their dormitory. Well, one of them fell asleep very quickly. And the other brother, he called this young man by name. He said, "There's the Lord speaking." And he said, "I want you to go to service in a certain land." And the brother who was sleeping must have heard him. And he said, "No, send William." That was the other man. So I never forget that. I know it's a simple thing. Unfortunately, both are in heaven now. But that's what happened. So it often happens, isn't it? I know it was only a let on. But it could be. Now listen, it could be. Whom shall I send? And who will go for us? Lord, send brother so-and-so. Send someone else, but don't send me. Now that's what's happening in many experiences. Why are we having so much inactivity in assembly life? Because of this. God wants you to be up and consecrated and serving him, and he gives you this call. Who will I send? Who will go for us? What's the answer to this man? Then said I, here am I. Send me. You know, I think the rapidity of his answer is a message. Look, please, at verse 4. And the post of the door moved at the voice of him that cried, and the house was filled with smoke. Then said I, woe is the other fella. No, woe is me. He heard the voice. What did he say? Woe is me. You know, we can put fingers at others, but this man didn't do that. As I said, woe is me. Verse 8, also I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send and who will go for us? Then said I, here am I, send me. Not good. I think those are wonderful words. Very simple, and I feel it's the word of confession in verse 5, but it's the word of consecration in verse number 8. He received the call. He received the call. I feel that he also relayed the communication. And I also feel he realized the chastisement. And he said, go and tell this people, hear ye indeed. And he's given the message he has to proclaim. Well, I trust that you will do that. I trust that I have done that. That is, when I'm conscious of the call of God in consecration, in service for him, then said I. Didn't leave it to another one. Others may have joined in. No, it was a personal, direct call to this dear servant of God. Just again, as it is in verse 5, so it is in verse 8. But look please at verse 11. Then said I, Lord, how long? Now notice the three things. Then said I, verse 5, who was me? Verse number 8 at the end, then said I, here am I, send me. Now here's another question. Then said I, Lord, how long? Now that's a very important thing. You remember Nehemiah, don't you? He's telling the king, in answer to the question, why has thy countenance fallen? And he's telling the king about the need in his land far away. And the king asks him, how long will thy journey be? And when will thou return? Nehemiah said, well, maybe about 6 months. No. No, he didn't. I feel that Nehemiah at that very moment of time sent a message to God, and God enabled him not to answer the king because he wouldn't know how long, but God knew. And listen, if only that were true of me, and I trust it's true of you, how long are you prepared to serve? What we're finding today is people claim the call of God. Then after a short time, the work's abandoned. Now, I can't understand that in the light of this verse. And the only answer that God gave, and all I want you to notice is one word, until. Until. How Isaiah was able to measure this, God only knows. How am I going to measure it? Until. And you know, beloved, I think that's mighty, isn't it? To see that, then he said, how long And God said, until. Well, it's one thing to have a confession. Then said I. It's another thing to have a consecration. Then said I. But listen, it's another thing to have what I'm going to call a continuation. Then said I, Lord, how long? Oh, I trust, I know these are very simple words, but I trust as I bring this to your soul tonight, you're not going to be like others, limiting it, restricting it. Get this word, until. Only God knows the length. Only God can supply the strength. And I trust, beloved, you will respond in the consecration as is needed in this chapter, as did Isaiah. Then said I, Lord, how long? How long have I to serve? Until. I think they're beautiful words seen in the New Testament on this word until. I could quote many, but I'm going to quote three to let you see the value of the word. If you look at Luke 23, you will find in verse 35 there's an until. Luke 13. And what do you find? Behold, your house is left unto you desolate, until ye shall say, blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord. Until. That's not, hasn't been reached yet, has it? Here's another one in Luke's Gospel, 21 and verse 24. Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until. What will that be? Well, the fullness of Gentiles hasn't come in yet. Until. And then you come to Romans chapter 9, chapter 11, verse 25. Blindness in part has happened unto Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles be brought in. You see, here are great untils, and they're continuing right to this moment. For in any one of those three, that moment hasn't come yet. And you see, God says here, until. And you're wondering, how long will I serve? How long will I be called upon to be responsible? Until. And if we get this, I feel this will mark our consecration to such an extent, we will seek to fulfill a time we know not its length. And you know, beloved, as I've said before, one of the saddest things in life is this, to find that men that once trod the path of devotion, once trod the path of service, give up long before that simple word until was reached. Could I just lift it to your soul tonight? Could I just bring it with all the feeling of my heart? Keep at it. The pressure is great. The problems may be many. The perplexion, the difficulties immeasurable. The perplexities incredible. But keep this word before you. Until. And I feel, beloved, if we could just reach that, that would be consecration in its fullness. It's all right to say, Lord, I'm going to consecrate myself right now. For how long? Until. Now, will you do that? And I trust if you do it, God will surely give you the grace to be consistent and constant and assured of this, that God will fulfill his word and his promise and his blessing without any question whatsoever. Shall we pray?